Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
And we're back. Just the two of us building castles in the pod. Just the two of us.
Building castles in the pod?
Building castles in the sky.
Castles.
Just the two of us, right. You and I. That's the lyric. But I change it to pod.
Isn't Islands in the Stream?
No, I was singing Just the Two of Us. The song Just the Two of Us. Because it's just the two of us.
There's it no is Lindsay. Just the two of us.
There's no Lindsay.
Yeah, that's right. There's no Lindsay.
That was by the way. That was my subtle way of saying there's no Lindsay on the pod this week. It's a Lindsay-free pod.
I was trying to be silent as long as possible so that our listeners could guess who it would be this week who is not here.
We only signed Lindsay to 30 episodes of the pod, so we have to like space it out. When she actually makes the pod appearances. Right. She's got a very strict writer in her contract, says no more than 30 appearances.
The Imagine Labor Union says she can only do X number of appearances on the podcast. That's right.
International Association of Imagineers, I believe, is the IAI, Local 21, the IAI Local 21. Proud to be part of it. So, so Lindsay's not with us this week. She's away on location, on assignment, which is to rest and relax.
For a couple days.
Enjoy the end of summer and warm fall before we head into the tundra. So she's escaping to Door County. So right. Lindsay,
speaking
you're,
of which, given that she's not here, that means she's gonna get lightly roasted, right?
It's so time to roast.
How hot is this oven set at? That's the question.
375. Cool, 375. Also out there on the pod, those longtime listeners, you're welcome to roast online. Join in the roast with us as you're listening. Your favorite thing's a roast. Our favorite third co-host, Lindsay Sheridan. So, David, how do you want to start the roast real quick before we get into this?
Yeah, everybody remember last week we played our new game. David asked funny questions about the symphony orchestra, which Lindsay answered. Yeah. Your man Dan Condon tagged me on
a post
on Twitter and said, hey, you should listen to this episode about Dirty Little Secrets from the Symphony Pit or the Orchestra Pit.
And I like Symphony Pit better.
And so I listened, and apparently Lindsay was wrong. Apparently, according to the fourth chair violinist in the LA Symphony, it is indeed the lesser technical player does turn the page of the stand partners. I know Lindsay was sort of holding up the veneer of symphony sort of stage managing, that it was always the inside arm, the inside person, but
giving an out, if you will. Giving an out, if you will.
Yeah, that's right.
The lesser technical.
Maybe that's not actually a roast. And maybe just Lindsay was being, you know, her normal sort of like marketing and PR self, right? Like sort of holding up the veneer. But apparently, according to that violinist, fourth chair, LA Symphony, it is technically the less technical stand partner.
You know, one of my favorite time of being in meetings with Lindsay is when I offer up ideas and she just sort of stares back blankly at me with her marketing PR brain, knowing like there's no way we're going to do that. And I know that that's when the meeting gets fun for me, because then I go like, well, okay, we're not going to do that, but where can we go?
So but what can we do?
But what can we do? So I'm like, all right, I've hit the border. What's appropriate in terms of a Imagine MKE marketing, you know, line? So I kind of miss Lindsay not to have that fun exchange. So.
Yeah.
And also I miss, you know, Lindsay's playlist. It's so much fun to know, you know, what the young people are listening to. Certainly not, you know, what I'm listening to, but I like to hear
Just the Two of Us, for example.
Yeah, she's not listening to Just the Two of Us or Whitesnake or Night Ranger. It's usually probably something that, you know, is probably some indie artist that's, you know, it's probably some lute player from somewhere out of Eau Claire, you know, playing, you know, Tibetan chanting or something like that.
Speaking of Tibetan chanting,
yes,
we have great guests coming up for you today. We have Julie Griffith and Grace Feuer from Historic Milwaukee to talk about an incredible return to form for Doors Open. Not return to form, but return to in-person convenings for Doors Open this year. And we're excited to chat with them about all of the great stuff that's been happening and all the stuff they have planned for the winter and the fall.
Yeah, that's a good segue to talking about our guests, given we probably don't want to get too roasty with Lindsay. Hey, one more segment, David, we like to do is what I like to call Our Creative Lives.
Yeah, Our Creative Lives. Do we have transition music? Our creative lives.
So as you all know, we contain multitudes. We're not always desk jockeys in the Imagine Salt Mines working for David Lee and trying to make the things happen. But we have other things that we like to pursue. So today I'll be talking a little bit about Our Creative Lives as this project, the Sketch County project I've been working on with some folks. I invited David to be part of it this weekend.
So I love that on like Sunday, I'm like thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do before the 49ers and Packers game. And I'm walking the dog in the morning and my phone rings and it's one MacArthur Antigua who, you know, typically doesn't call.
On a Sunday morning. Who's calling me on a Sunday morning? Yeah, who's calling me on a Sunday morning?
And so I pick up and Mac is like, hey, what are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm walking the dog right now. He's like, do you want to come hold the boom for me? And I'm like, what? Wait, what's going on? And so apparently Mac was shooting a sketch and apparently did not find a boom operator.
And no. Tells you how much I know about shooting things. So luckily we're, you know, I'm on a squad with about five. So the project's called, it's Comedy Six Pack. And so it's like teams of six are throughout Milwaukee, self-organized. It's an offshoot of like the Sketch 22 project, which brings people together to do a sketch show in real time, but we can't do it in real time. So we're actually doing recorded sketches and putting it together. So the project will actually air in December, but over the last several months we've been writing sketches and now we're in the filming stage. And so we've written several sketches. And so what works, David, is that each of us, there's six of us in this ensemble, each of us gets assigned to direct, even though it's not the one we've written.
Yeah.
You get to direct. So I was directing one and I said, sure, I'll direct it. And then like a week out, it's like, hey, are you ready to direct? And I'm like, what do I do again? How does this work? Like, I just sort of realized, like, I don't know what I'm doing. So luckily we've got some really talented people who help guide me. And, you know, namely one guy I want to call it, Matt Filipovits, who's a comedian in town, does some really amazing work because he's got all the tech. And so he actually helped me. I would say technically he's probably the cinematographer. He's like the DP and the editor at the end.
But he's also in it too, right?
He's in it too. And he's hilarious. So so I directed a sketch and I actually filmed another sketch on Zoom on Thursday night. And then I actually this Wednesday night, I actually was in front of a green screen. So it's coming to a head. We're producing and it's really been neat, you know, to work with people that I don't really know that well. But it was cool to be invited by Megan McGee, who I work with, you know, she's the head of X Fabula. We work together on different work groups, but she invited me to part of this sketch group and she's been on Broad Minded and some other stuff. So she brought together a really cool group of folks. I just appreciate everybody's like professional about it. There's not a lot of drama. Everybody writes, we record and we do it. So it's been a lot of fun so far.
I've always found that it's been a long time since I've had to direct a play or a film. But I've always found that kind of working on a script to sort of visualize, you know, the written word into a moving collection of images always sort of I've always been able to leverage some really interesting problem solving skills. Did you find any instances where over the weekend where you had to solve interesting problems?
Well, the thing about it, it's a 5-minute sketch, right, David? But I had about 30 setups.
Some special effects too.
Yeah, and special effects. But I had 30 setups, if that makes sense, right? Because you just want to be static, two shot. Like had to do some up closes, get some distance stuff. And so I storyboarded it out, right? Someone wrote out the sketch, but then I went and put it into almost like a table and like wrote out how I wanted the.
Did you do a 3-hour agenda?
I didn't do a 3-hour agenda, no. But it was pretty much like a rudimentary shot chart or whatever. I don't know what you all call it, but it's like, this is going to be a 2-person shot. This is going to be head on. And so I gave it to Matt to look at and he was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, I think like, I don't know if that's what you're supposed to do, but that's what made sense to me. I wanted to map out ahead and I ended up maybe only using 25 of the 30, because when you're in the moment, you're like, oh, actually, we can combine all this together, or this only makes sense. You know, other things I learned, David, is like you want to have a different looks because you don't want to look the same. You know, all the shots look the same, but you can't be too different because in editing later, you don't want to have the continuity to look funny. So I think that's like the nuance of how do you make the different. I guess I got an appreciation, and this is what you probably understand all the time. The way the camera, again, I'm going to say something that a lot of film people out there are like, duh. But for somebody who, again, I'm kind of newish, like I don't do it a lot.
Yeah.
Again, the way you position the camera and the editing gives the piece momentum, like it moves it forward. Right. And so I would, as opposed to when you're thinking about, again, I'm just used to being on stage doing sketch, you know, doing scenes on stage. It's static. We're all in a stage together. You really got to think differently about that in terms of when you're doing a 5-minute sketch. And so that was fun to just grapple with. There was nothing I felt overwhelmed by. It was a pretty simple piece. Looking forward to sharing it with y'all later. We'll share the link out. And honestly, David, the thing I asked the group is like, are we going to do like an opening credits montage? Cause that's been my,
yeah, that's love, what you want to do.
Yeah. I always love being in an opening montage.
You know, like, you know what you need to do, Mac? The one that you write should be an opening credits montage.
That's my sketch. It's just an opening credits montage. Oh man, I love a good opening montage. So,
so I guess one question. So I had the opportunity to see a special sneak preview of it. One question I have for you as the director: was there a creative choice as to not showing the things that they find until the thing that they find comes?
Yes, because the sketch is about the sketch is about two kids on a scavenger hunt finding things. We didn't have all the props.
Oh, got it. But it's so. The effect, I got to tell you, the effect of somebody who watched it, like at first I'm like, why isn't he showing the things that they find? And then the big reveal is that they find a thing.
Yeah.
And
that's the one you really want to pay attention
to.
That's the one
that when they find the thing, it is so hilarious, right? When it happens. Right. And so, yeah, just it was.
Oh, I'm glad I had the effect of creating more like suspense, like, ooh, but then they find something it is. So me and Matt agreed, like, so there were a couple items. So it's a scavenger hunt. These two kids are on a scavenger hunt and they find smaller items, right? I actually had a couple of those smaller items available, but there's a couple items that are pretty unique that we didn't have. And so Matt's guidance was, listen, you don't show some of something and you don't show the other things. Either you show them all or you don't show until you reveal the big find.
Yeah.
And so that was an elegant problem solve.
Yeah.
The other, and one final thing I'll learn, David, now that I've been in the experience of being acting in these sketches and then I've had the experience directing. I know how really powerful it feels to keep a shoot moving, right, David? Like it's really good to be like, it took us 2 hours to do 5 minutes. That seems like a long time. I think it was the right amount of time. We budgeted for it, but I also knew like if I didn't have my stuff together, that could have been a lot longer. And that really can kill momentum for people. So I was really cognizant of like, did we get the shot? Great. Let's move on to the next one. Let's move. And then that creates a momentum of filming. It creates confidence in what we're doing. And I didn't let on that I've never really done this. I just sort of walked in like, all right, guys, let's do the shot. Go in there. And everybody had this sense of like calm. And then after it's like, oh, I'm glad I faked it because I haven't directed a video sketch in like maybe 13, 15, you know, years. So
yeah.
But everybody was like, oh, I didn't know. It seemed pretty, you know, clipped along and we got out at the right time. So, and you probably can attest to that, David, right? Like you got to get you want to get the shots in and keep moving. Right. Like
I think you definitely want to keep a sense of pace and a sense of momentum, right? Particularly for the folks who are, you know, for a larger shoot, you want at least the folks who are close to you sort of having that sense, right? I got to tell you though, the time I was on a large movie set, like $130 million film set, I was a cast member, and we would show up at 5 a.m. Get in hair and makeup, not shoot the first shot until noon. We'd break for lunch while everybody reset the shot. And then we go again at 3 and then we get wrapped. You know, we would cut and they'd have to reset. We go again at like, you know, 4 or 5. And then they would wrap us as the sun was going down. And, you know, it's, you know, obviously at a scale of a 5-minute sketch is different than a $130 million movie. Where your resets are much faster, right? You get the thing, just go again, as opposed to some of these larger scale things where you're moving, helicopters and lights and everything else to get back to get back to literally get back to one requires almost moving an army, right? And I think that's that's always been the thing that I, as I reflect on some of my more favorite kind of like outside of the office job situations that I've been in, it's sort of like the sense of a brigade moving together, right? Whether it's a brigade in the kitchen or a brigade on a movie set or a film set, that it sort of just this idea of just marshaling forces, right, to be able to tell a story, whether it's on screen, on a plate, or in the context of our guests today, in our spaces in Milwaukee.
Oh, that's a sweet segue, as we're going to bring on from Historic Milwaukee Incorporated, which is dedicated to increasing awareness of and commitment to Milwaukee's architecture, history, and the built environment. We're excited to welcome back Program Director Julia Griffith. And Julia brought back up one of her teammates there, Grace Fuhr, who is the Special Events Director, Historic Milwaukee. They're going to share with us how Doors Open went, as well as what they're looking forward to for the rest of the year. Tomorrow will be a better day. Welcome to the virtual recording studio, Julia and Grace.
Thanks for having us.
It is so much fun to have you both here, but we first have to acknowledge that Julia has now become the first ever 3X guest on our podcast, which makes Historic Milwaukee then like the world heavyweight champion so far of organizations in the Imagine MKE universe. So
it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool standard because it's quantity that David's setting. Like, the amount of times you show up, that's how you win the belt. That's pretty
much right. I'm like, you can't cut me off now. You can't let other people catch up. We have to get, we have to keep going.
That's right. You're our Tony Randall, as I put in the Gmail. You're like, well, I'm not going in there by myself. I'm gonna bring.
We'll try and keep the content fresh.
Yeah. Grace gets it.
She does.
Grace understands how this works. Well, so just welcome, and we're so excited to have our folks at Historic Milwaukee, as you all are amazing storytellers of the city, and just had a return to form as you welcome folks back to the various doors. You opened them, one might say. With Doors Open last weekend. But before we get to that, let's talk about y'all. And we're an arts and culture podcast, and we recognize that folks have been shaped by arts and cultural experiences over the course of their life. So we're curious, Grace, Julia, what is an arts and cultural experience that had left a strong imprint on you? It could be from your formative years. Could have been last week. I don't know. But we're curious.
Grace, so, you want to go first?
Sure. So one that ties a little bit into a program we actually did this week as part of the virtual Doors Open is the C.K. Ledesma is a local artist, also with ties to Puerto Rico and a good friend of mine. And I was lucky enough to take part in his project Proyecto Corn Beef, which C.K. at the beginning of the pandemic thought, you know, we're all isolated from each other, and the biggest thing that we're missing is eating meals together. And CK goes into a lot more detail about that, and you can even look online and learn a lot more about that, because they are a Mary Knoll fellow this year. And so I was able to take part in that meal, and we made a playlist and made food and kind of cooked and watched. And then we, to kind of complicate it even a little bit more, we also had another friend that was on a Zoom with us while we were doing it. And this was basically 2 weeks before George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis. So it also was timed in this way that where we were still really insulated and we didn't know what was coming in the next few weeks. So it was very memorable and a really beautiful project to be able to take part in.
Did you guys cook together and sort of prepare the meal together? So it was a big sort of communal event.
Yes. Yeah. So I didn't do a very good job of describing it. So CK mailed out boxes of food.
Oh, sure.
Traditional corned beef, plantains, and a rice that you cooked in your home. And to go along with it were these videos on how to prepare it. We put our three-year-old to sleep so that we could actually focus and concentrate on making the meal. And then we had another friend who CK had mailed the box to, who we were Zooming with, and kind of trying to figure out how to make it at the same time. And then we all sat down with our computers in front of us at our meal and ate together. And part of it, a really big part of it, is making a playlist as you're making the food and listening to the music.
Thanks, Grace, for sharing that awesome story, a recent story, right? A recent, powerful story.
I think just, like, if I could just make one sort of bullet point on this, is that just this idea that, like, art and food are the things that sort of make us essentially human, right? And like what an incredible project to sort of bring people together, build community that way, have music, food, and even the sort of attenuated Zoom way of eating together. Just what a lovely project. We're super excited to learn more about it. And we will link to it, whatever is in the thing, in our show notes. How about you, Julia? A formative arts and cultural experience or something recent?
Mine's definitely much more formative. I started dance when I was 3 and did basically every form: jazz, ballet, modern, tap, musical theater through college. And I did, you know, professional productions and was on a competition team and just took class. Mm. So for me, a lot of, you know, that, just that music, I hear, you know, sometimes you hear it in the grocery store, but it sort of transports me when I hear it now, because I've done pieces to so many different genres of music and over the years. Mm. And there are some that just stick out more than others, but it's, it trained me in a lot of ways, but that's kind of the way that it kind of pops back up in my life that surprises me. Like, I don't expect to hear a song, or particularly in the grocery store, you're like, oh, okay, now I'm old. Like, that song was cool, and now it's grocery store music. But yeah, I think for me, that definitely broadened, like, my exposure to classical music and kind of what music, how to parse music, kind of feel it, read it. And you can't beat a dancing. It makes you happy. Mm-hmm.
So when you're at the CVS and On Broadway comes on by George Benson, do you break and dance?
Do you do a little jazz routine? Sometimes I, like, will remember the steps in my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, that was, like, the piece. Yep. But no, never in the physical realm. I do not live a musical life. Like, I do not burst into song it. And dance.
You don't manifest the dance part.
I hope we've incepted that idea so that next time it does happen, that there is a little bit of a shoulder shimmy or something as you're picking out.
Right. I'll pause. I'll think of it. Yeah. I'll skip right over it and keep going.
I do feel like, for as long as we've worked in the office together, Julia, I've not seen you do a dance. We might have to change that.
That's right.
Yes.
I dance a lot at my house. Like, when I'm cooking, like, I love to have music on, but our office, we don't really. But yeah, well, we'll have to have a party of some.
This might be a Stacey question. We'll have to see if we can't get some old American songbook songs being piped through your office. See what happens.
You got the Bluetooth speaker ready. Let's do it.
Yeah. Ready, fired up. Well, thanks for sharing that story and some recent, some deep in the past. And this past weekend, you set the stage for a lot of people to have a real moment in the city, as they've got to experience Milwaukee again through Doors Open. MKE, it returned in person last weekend, also continues to run virtually. So there's an innovation there, no longer just a weekend, but rather it has continued to run, I believe, through October 10th.
Through October 3rd.
October 3rd. I wanted to go an extra week. That was me incepting.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next week. Or maybe I'll just watch YouTubes and people walk around. And
A lot of it will stay online after the 3rd. We did last year, we had a 16 days of virtual content and nothing was in person, of course, last year. So we shrunk it back a little bit, knowing that we were going to be heavy on the in-person weekend.
What did it take to get to that in-person weekend? As we've all experienced, it's been a moving target of how we can gather publicly. So would love to hear what it took to get to those 2 days.
We, since last year's Doors Open, have been wondering if Doors Open would come back in person in 2021. So it was reevaluating every month leading up to the event, basically, whether the program would be in person or not. But I would say June is when we ultimately decided. And a big part of it was talking with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and knowing that the Bradley Symphony center would be a part of Doors Open and that they were ready to open up because this following weekend is going to be their actual grand opening with the full orchestra in the theater. So they were ready to go. And there were several other sites that said, you know, we're excited to open up safely with masks on. So let's give it a try. We did also look to other events like Summerfest, which wound up wrapping up the weekend before Doors Open, and the State Fair took place in person. So knowing those two large scale events were taking place in person, we thought we would give it a try. Of course, when we made that decision in June, things were looking really good from a COVID perspective, and the Delta variant wasn't with us yet to the extent that it is now. So we wanted to be really careful and called the mask policy really early on. And we partnered with the Milwaukee Health Department to hand out more than 2,000 masks over the weekend. And most people arrived masked as well, and we're taking that quite seriously. And then we did have quite a few sites, the larger theaters that had higher attendance, were requiring vaccines or proof of negative COVID test as well.
Oh, so you almost had like variable options there. Like for some things you had to have that extra level of that to do that. So what did you anticipate, you know, last weekend when it finally unfolded, and what did you discover, as well as what surprised you when you finally had it happen?
I didn't know exactly what to anticipate from a attendance perspective, especially, you know, looking at like Summerfest numbers and other big scale events, we had a lot of questions. But we did, because, and Julia can attest to this too, we work in the office and get a lot of phone calls from people who are excited and people who are confused in the weeks leading up to Doors Open. And we knew we were getting a lot of calls and excitement around the program. So we figured that we would have a pretty well attended event. And Julia could talk a little bit too about one thing that we knew a lot about are the ticketed tours that we host every year. So yeah, I don't know if Julia, you want to talk a little bit about those. Most of them sold out.
Yeah. And we do a series of, as Grace said, ticketed tours, which have just a small fee, or they're free if they're municipal sites. And that was kind of tricky in the sense that some sites which are generally open decided to be ticketed, which is fine. But just some changing kind of, will this be just for this year, for the future? The Port of Milwaukee is a very popular bus tour that you used to get up. People would like wait in line at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday to sign up for. And we moved that all online. And I think it never surprises me. The tours are always interesting and they're always diverse and, you know, kind of touch on different things. Building tours, material culture. But that so many guides were really excited to kind of be like, yeah, I'll take 20 strangers around. Like, it's great. We're really thrilled to keep showing our neighborhood or talk about our business or, you know, whatever it happened to be. And, you know, the love for Veolia MMSD's Jones Island never ceases to amaze me. There's like a deep fascination with that place, which is phenomenal because it's so fascinating. But it never fails to amaze me how excited people are about water treatment.
Something we all take for granted, but they're like, hey, how it's made? How does this work? How do we do this? And it's there. I think you're citing, and it sort of brought to my mind, it's like how much love that your tour guides have for telling that story. And they were just, okay, let's keep going. I want to do this. And so that's great. And it speaks to, again, the passion of the folks that you bring together and you've been able to convene as volunteers.
Yeah. When going into the planning too, we didn't know how many sites would want to participate and open up, how many volunteers we would get this year. And it all wound up coming in, I think, at larger numbers than we anticipated. So we wound up with over 70 sites that people could visit in person. We had over 250 volunteers sign up. A huge portion of them were UWM architecture students, and they did a great job. We're really grateful. First year UWM students who are kind of venturing off campus for the first time during Doors Open. So that was really neat to see. So that exceeded our expectations. And then going into the weekend, one of my concerns was, because we have never done this before, the requiring of masks, and then the sites that required vaccines, like what kind of pushback might we have, or what sort of interactions would volunteers have who were trying to encourage this policy. And there were no issues whatsoever with that. So people were just really respectful. Our volunteers are amazing and do a great job helping, you know, guide people and welcome people to these sites safely. So that went really well.
So generally the feeling, right, is that the demand for coming back to doing doors open as it has been in person has been higher than you expected or about as you expected?
I would say it was about what I expected.
About what you expected.
And that's one of the questions we asked too of sites who participated every year. Like, did you have more or less people than you would have expected? Or was the experience like what you anticipated that it would be? And this year it was pretty much what more or less what people expected. So definitely not, we're not looking at pre-pandemic numbers, but people were really able to come out and enjoy themselves.
But people came out. It wasn't like it wasn't. Yeah. I think the reason why I'm asking is that we're beginning to think about like an event we're calling this sort of quote unquote event that we're doing in middle of November, and like we're
I like that's in quotes. Event is in quotes. Event.
It just seems so crazy.
We don't want to be hemmed in with these traditional words like conference or meeting
or summit or whatever. Constitutional convention. What you know, whatever it
instead
might be.
Instead of a retreat, let's call it an advance, David. Let's do these things.
And we are every person we've talked to about it is like, is it in person? And we're like, yes.
Question mark?
Yes, because it, you know, it feels like virtual seems easy. In person seems easy if people come. Hybrid seems like a mess, and so we have to figure out how we're going to do this thing, and you know where it's going to be, and it, like all of it. Just as an organization that typically produces meetings in a non-pandemic state in person, it just feels really weird. And I feel very like, I don't know. I just. So it's good to hear that it seems like people and spaces are feel okay-ish about this thing. And I think our view is that like, if places like the Rep and the MSO and all these other places are welcoming people in, then why can't 50 to 100 people come to a meeting of ours?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and with doors open too, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but it is challenging from the event planning perspective to have hybrid options, but it does meet people where they're at. So that was a big part of why we chose to still have a lot of virtual content available.
Right. That's a great bridge, Grace. That's a great bridge in this virtual tours. Cause again, as you said, till October 3rd, we're continuing these virtual tours. And again, it's bridging to last year that it was all virtual last year. So now this year you've been able to do in-person and virtual. What did you learn from running it last year that you were able to apply in enhancing the virtual experience this time? And what do you hope happens as a result of being able to do it in this way? It is something we expect from years on out. What do you got?
Yeah, well, we learned that people really liked the virtual option. Like, we've never gotten such positive feedback on our surveys as we did last year, because I joke, people didn't have to complain about parking or long lines. but there just genuinely was a lot of positive feedback about being able to look at different sites, whether it was to plan, you know, to visit places in person in the future, or from people who might have mobility issues who are able to look from their own home. And then now, especially because of the pandemic, people who just aren't ready to go out. And like, I have a 3-year-old, so I'm not taking her to a lot of places with big crowds and can't get her COVID tested all the time, but we can look at some content online. So we just found that a lot of it worked really well. The biggest thing that we did last year was invited the individual sites that would typically open in person to share photos, video, and if they wanted to, 360 virtual reality. So Historic Milwaukee provided some of that for various sites, but for the most part, the individual sites provided that content to us. So you can go online now and look, and we had about 30 sites that just participated virtually this year. One of them is Pfizer Forum, for example, is a big one that you can go online and take a virtual tour of. The We Energies building is another one that you can take a 360 virtual reality tour of. That's really neat to go into. And then one that we created last year that I'm really proud of, and it's still available to view, is Evelyn Patricia Terry's studio and home in the Lindsay Heights neighborhood. We did a 360 virtual reality, and Evelyn actually narrates it. So you can see this collection of hundreds of unique artworks, you know, floor to ceiling. And it's almost like you're in her home with her. So we were able to develop a lot of really innovative stuff that way. And we wanted, again, like I mentioned before, just to offer that option this year for people. And I think to the question of, will we continue doing this in the future? It seems like virtual is here to stay to a certain extent. So I would say yes, that it'll always be play some role in Doors Open and in Spaces and Traces, which is our spring neighborhood tour event. We had all virtual last year, but I'm imagining that we'll continue to do some sort of virtual programming for that as well. And then this week we were able to host for the second year a program called Neighborhood Gems with Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. And Adam Carr moderates the panel. It's with seven artists and community leaders. C.K. Ledesma, who I mentioned, was one of them. Naya Luna is a muralist who talked about her new mural, the Dolores Huerta mural on Cesar Chavez. And that is a really neat program that I hope that we continue doing as well. So last year was seven different community leaders. This year, a group of seven new, and it's one that I don't think that we'd be able to get everybody in the room for physically. So it works really well as a Zoom event. Naya Luna was actually outside on her front porch in Oakland, California.
Well, I would go ahead, Julia.
Oh, no, I would just add to the virtual content. You know, we talk so much about architecture at Historic Milwaukee, and offering a building an opportunity to share images and photo, you know, video, whatever, 360, the potential to show you something that you actually couldn't see as easily in person, whether it's too high above your head in an area that's kind of inaccessible. It does, we get a slightly different perspective. You know, when people go to see Evelyn's gallery, they maybe wouldn't get this full tour. They'd maybe get a shorter part of her attention span. So it does give us the ability to kind of offer people things that you maybe wouldn't get person to person in physical space. And I also think, you know, as Grace said about Neighborhood Gems, to capture projects that are disparate but pull everyone together, it is. And then we can record it easily. So then it continues to live on and people can see it beyond just were you in the room? Because the work all those artists and folks do is phenomenal. And it's easier to be like, watch this great video where they're talking about themselves as opposed to listening to us regurgitate what we remember. You know, no, I always feel like for an artist, they should speak, you know, about themselves in their own words. So it's appreciated. And I love the format of that. Just like, quick, and you get kind of teaser. It's like a teaser for a movie, and then you like dive deep. Yeah.
So the last time you were here, Julia, we were you just launched or just were about to launch the app.
Yeah.
And we had given you all these great suggestions about Solomon George and Byron taking people on tours and maybe getting the knife fights or something in the middle of the
app. We're big on knife fights. That was the real part we were really excited about. Like, it could have been anything.
Yeah.
Or like a where in Milwaukee is. You know, is I don't know, Carol Cheese Curd or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
How's that been going, and what's been the effect of the app and the platform been on this last year, or Doors Open in general, or the work of HMI?
Yeah, well, so for Doors Open specifically, it wasn't Byron, George, and Solomon. It was Lydia, Keith, and Angelique. So the three tours we launched were Silver City. So Lydia narrated that tour in English and Spanish. Angelique did the Villard Avenue tour, and then Keith did the Avenues West. So it's been great to get people who are exceptionally busy. They all work for the various community development corporations or BIDs that are in those neighborhoods. Exceptionally busy people who have so much passion and enthusiasm for their communities to capture them in a way that we can share basically anytime anybody would want to go is phenomenal. You know, really centering their voices in telling their community history and future. There's a lot of aspiration and, you know, plans and kind of forward thinking as much as we do talk about neighborhood history, which is great. And then for us, you know, we can only really offer so many human-led walking tours in so many neighborhoods on so many days. There's just not enough time in the calendar. And so the app has really allowed us to complement a lot of those things and expand beyond to places that maybe would be not trickier to program, but maybe just it's so much nicer to be like, oh, you're biking on the Beer Line Trail. Let me like pull out my phone and I can listen along while I learn about the art that I'm going by. But to end up organizing a bike tour would take so much more staff time, and the organic experience is basically just as good. I mean, it's not quite the same, but it's been really nice to be able to share more stories with more people more frequently.
Maybe there's like a Pokemon Go type thing we could do, except you're not capturing Pokemon, but you're capturing Solomon, whatever, you know, all these little historical figures, you catch them all.
And the
bitsy reality experience.
Can you imagine like Beth and Keith and all of them sort of like just running around their neighborhood?
Exactly. You gotta catch them. You gotta catch the bid. the chairs of each bid. It's a very
pictures of them peeking around the
building. Yeah, exactly.
Did you find them?
The ball is a ball. Like,
I'm almost certain we can get Beth to sign on to this. She would be down. Is my
plus
guess.
like a Gabe. A Gabe Yeager would be like a lot of points because he's so he's pretty live. He's pretty quick. He's like, oh, you got Gabe.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Yeah, he's hard.
Yeah.
And anytime you guys need ideas for this app, come to us. Give us a call.
Yeah.
I'm writing it down.
If you're not seeing at home because you can't, Grace is miming. She's miming drawing right now. She's miming. So
with a real pen, I have a real pen.
So I know you all are still in the time of like aggregating all of the data from Doors Open. It's not over yet. Do you have any like highlights about any of the attendance or data points that you might want to be able to share that would get us and our folks excited about what's
not all precincts are reporting, David, right?
Not all precincts are in. That's right.
This is just early.
We don't have all the data, but the biggest one that I haven't talked about that much yet, but it was really, you know, one that we were anticipating and really excited so much to partner with Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. And they wound up with over 3,200 visitors throughout Sunday. They were open just the Sunday of Doors Open. And what was really amazing about what they did there is, I mean, the theater is just phenomenal. Yeah. The atrium that they built, the new space is beautiful. Mm. And the way that when you go from one to the next, you're just blown away. But they also had the whole orchestra there performing throughout the afternoon. And they performed several times.
Wow.
A few different pieces to give you a sense of the acoustics in the space. So the conductor introduced himself and said, you know, this is not just an amazing theater, but it's amazing acoustically. And it's really one of the most amazing theaters in North America. So let's hear what it sounds like. And it was really a treat. They did have some jazz performance happening in the atrium in the morning too. So they brought the space alive with musical performance there, which is what the theater is intended for. And we did even hear back from somebody who took the survey who said we attended the Bradley Symphony Center. It was beautiful. And we went there because one of the people in the group is wheelchair bound and they wanted to go like figure out what the accessibility situation was before going to the theater during the regular season. So various people were kind of testing it out to see you know, where they'd want to sit and making sure that they would have the best experience once the symphony is performing. But that was definitely the highest attended site, and people were having a great time there that day.
And if you haven't been, there's virtual content, so you could check it out. It's phenomenal. It's just, and for people who are not familiar, it's a 1931 wrap theater that's been slightly expanded to fit the entire orchestra on the stage. But you're talking, I mean, like the silver leaf and the paintings and the light fixtures and the wood paneling. I mean, I could go on and on. It is proof that you know, because I'm from a preservation background. So you're taking historic theaters, notoriously difficult to reprogram, reuse, because they're so expensive, but they have really connected their historic theater with this new build. And it just, it's phenomenal.
You approve. It sounds Julia approved.
Chef's kiss times a million.
I like that Julia like walked in when it's done and like slaps a sticker on a wall. I was like, yep.
Approved.
JG approved.
Walks out. Just walks out.
That's awesome. So, you know, that building is one of the projects that we were lucky enough to see from kind of the beginning to the end. And we got to walk through it a couple of times when it was being built before it was open. And then some of us were there last week for a tuning concert. Mm-hmm. And I can't, we talked a little bit about it last week when we did our podcast last week, but just to underline again, I have no context for what buildings are supposed to be like Julia does, but it is absolutely incredible. And I, as somebody who is sort of just like, meh, you know, it's cool. It, when you hear that orchestra play, it is unbelievable, the acoustics of that building. Just one last thought about it. When my wife walked in to the lobby, her first thought was, you know, that incredible Art Deco lobby. She was like, God, I feel like I'm in the Great Gatsby. Mm. And that's sort of, you sort of get that feeling, right? Because of all the silver and the Art Deco in that lobby.
Everybody was also in Hats and Tails as well. Everybody was also black tie.
That's right.
That also gave it a Gatsby vibe.
That's probably not the way we want to brand the symphony again. We don't want to make it any more exclusive or make it feel any more.
When I go next, I'm just gonna wear jorts and like you know, like and one of those sleeveless shirts, but it's like hacked off, so to show off the guns. We'll see what they'll let me in. Doors open continues, but I remember I got an email from I think Stacy, the ED, was gonna come to a meeting, and she's like, we're done for today. We're resting today. So I'm like, yeah, it was a big weekend. Yeah. So that being said, I know that, you know, the dust is still settling from that, but I'm just sort of, what are y'all looking forward to as we head into the end of 21 calendar year, as well as looking yonder to 2022?
We have a couple of in-person events coming up. So one site that was not able to participate in person in doors open this year is the Double Dutch Hotel, and they opened their doors, I think, right before the pandemic hit. But it's a restored historic mansion that was actually a duplex, but it's really cool. Small boutique hotel now, and kind of near Northwestern Mutual, in that neighborhood. And we are doing some guided tours with them in fall. So those will be in person. We're also going to be doing a program at the Milwaukee Club, and John Eastberg will talk about the history of the Milwaukee Club, but a really smaller program. You know, we'll try and keep it socially distanced and masks and vaccines and all that. And we are looking at doing a couple of virtual programs in partnership with Josh Jeffers, who is a developer who's working on the renovation of the old Journal Sentinel building and the Milwaukee Athletic Club. So those will be a couple of things that people can tune into online this fall and winter. And then from an events perspective, next spring, we will be looking at Spaces and Traces, which is, I mentioned before, is a neighborhood open house event. And this is actually our 40th anniversary of the event. So Historic Milwaukee has been around since the 70s. This is the 40th anniversary of Spaces and Traces. And it's kind of like a neighborhood doors open, except for you get to go into people's houses and apartments and condos.
It's so doors open, but people's houses. That was the pitch. That was the pitch. What so about if you, doors if you, open, but it's your house?
If you live downtown and you want to open up your house to some people, let us know.
And so if I were to imagine sort of like a tent pole, if you will, doors open is the fall tent pole event, and Spaces and Traces you the spring tent pole. Is fair to say, right?
Yeah, great.
And then from a tour perspective, so we have, except for last year, done Skywalkie, which is a tour on the west side of the river using the Skywalk system, which would connect you into like Grand Avenue Mall, which we're all waiting to find out when that will be. The Third Street Market Hall will finally open. They keep teasing all these delicious restaurants. I'm like, yeah, but I can't go to any of them. So I would say for that, keep an eye on our website. We are still trying to figure out. And then per usual, keeping an eye on the COVID situation because we want to be safe. But yeah, and then we do a hop tour using the streetcar as well.
The hop tour.
Yeah, which is kind of fun. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit more urban renewal and kind of the two phases, sort of hop urban renewal and then 1960s urban renewal. Mm. Yeah.
We do all of our tours are led by volunteer docents, and Julia leads a very awesome guide training program too that I'll let her plug.
Yeah, we'll have guide training into the spring. I don't have exact dates, but if you're interested, there's a volunteer form where you can find my email on the website. But we do a little bit of architecture training, a little bit of history, and then kind of how you develop and lead a tour. And it's actually a lot of fun. You learn a lot. And then ultimately you give tours, which helps you meet great people and mostly spend a lot of time being an ambassador to how great Milwaukee is, because even people who live here sometimes don't know enough about particular neighborhoods or whatever. So it's a fun way to really celebrate Milwaukee.
That's so neat. So how many people do you anticipate or usually train up? Like you're sort of the rookie class of tours.
Yeah, we usually have 15 to 20 that do guide training. Okay. We have about 45 guides in regular rotation and then some who do special tours and other things. But yeah, usually 15 to 20 is the group. Yeah. Not everybody, we have a little attrition sometimes, but usually everyone comes through and gives their tours, and it's great fun. It is actually really fun. You get to meet people who like things that you like, you know, similar interests, but maybe different, live in different parts of the city, but you both love architecture, Milwaukee history. And it's always fun to meet people. And then they're like, oh, we're comparing notes about what we remember when, you know, from when I grew up or from this. Mm. So it's definitely a cohort that we people rely on as they move forward as tour guides. Then
you don't have to be an architect to be a tour guide.
Right. Just got to love the city.
Interested.
Yep. Just got to be like, ooh, did you know about this? And then is that one of the stems you teach? Ooh, did you know about this? And then
enthusiasm. You just have to be super enthusiastic.
Pretty much.
Any truth? I heard that you're possibly teaching them a flash mob dance that they could all synchronize and do together. Like that's what I heard. And
on the last day of guide training. Yeah.
That's right. I said, all right, cool. Like on a certain day, on 414 day, you fire up a signal and they all come out and they do the they do the dance on the river.
How river did you know that?
Well, you know, I've got some leads. It's kind of the cool thing about this job. You talk to people, Exactly. David, I kind of think like I'm gonna pitch you an idea, David. Let's get Sammer to track me learning how to be a guide. And then we'll sort of see on my first tour.
I think that's a great idea. We've been discussing internally if we could like start a new program where we do sort of like cultural exchange with Mac getting trained to do different jobs, right? So one potentially being a guide, another might be the conductor of the MSO.
aren't there some British comedians who've been doing that?
Sure. I'm sure they did.
It's amusing. They did some Olympic training. Pretty entertaining. You could go do I'm a principal with the Milwaukee Ballet.
Yeah, exactly. Get me in there. Get me in there. Learn the things. Give me a week and see what I can do in a week.
And then we need Itzel to come and do Mac's job, which is, you know, can she lead a meeting and get action commitments from a group of arts people. Leaders. Yeah,
of people. Arts leaders.
Yeah.
There you go.
Probably rather do the ballet part.
You're hired.
If we could do that, I would love to. Sure. I would love to. That sounds like fun.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I'll do my best to not make Chicago references. Well, you know, in Chicago, this is what we do.
No.
How come I didn't get any assignments this week, Julia? Yeah. Right. We'll get you next week.
About that.
Yeah, we'll get you out there next week. Sure. Whatever. Well, you know, as we're so grateful for your time as you know, sharing with us how great Doors Open went and it continues to go, as well as what's coming on to make sure more folks can learn about and experience virtually and in person the living history of our city. We like to pivot towards we're going to make history as you are both going to play the role as our next czars of arts and culture for the city.
This would be Julia's third reign in this role. Yeah. So I think
you're like the Grover Cleveland of this experience, right?
or FDR, right?
I feel like Grace should either, she can go first or she
can. Grace go first. Yeah, you got to think of a new policy, Julia.
That's right. You can't run back the two old ones.
You can't run back the two old ones.
I can't remember what I said.
Now I'm not sure if I'm going to repeat Julia's. I know.
No, that's okay, because it's yours. You're going to do it in your own way. So Grace, what is a policy? You got to hurry up because you don't have a long time to be this difficult. What would be the policy around arts and culture you want to make sure to pass here in Milwaukee?
Yeah. So to essentially create a arts and culture czar.
That's very meta. Yes. That's very meta. Wow.
That would be housed in the city of Milwaukee as a city department. So not to put historic Milwaukee out of a job, but in the city of Toronto, they actually run Doors Open Toronto, their arts and culture department. Mm-hmm. So it's like a arts and festival department within that city. So I'd love to see essentially the arts board, which is an all volunteer board, become more of a department within the city of Milwaukee.
Great. Lock that down. Thanks.
I'll just tack on to Grace's, because I have a friend in Philly who's done that kind of like nightmare thing. And I would say we just like add that into Grace's arts and culture department, because like a night czar, nightmare of sorts. Ooh. To kind of boost a lot of, so my friend who's been working on it in Philly has been doing a lot of, he's a DJ, so lots of like shows, nightclubs, really trying to boost that industry, which has been struggling obviously with the pandemic. But then they do a lot in terms of like general safety and all that kind of stuff as well. So it's like a full picture of what it means to operate at night in your, you know, in Philadelphia. So that I definitely haven't talked about, I don't think. Back and listen to other episodes, because I don't remember what I said. But he posts about it a lot. He's got German friends and they have that, but it's kind of an interesting, I'll just add on to Grace's. I'll be the princess in this situation.
Awesome. Well, you know, your term just ended, because as our podcast comes to an end, but Dave and I are committed to the legacy of making sure that we have stronger coordination at the city level, investment at the city level, right, in our arts and culture, as well as making sure that Milwaukee becomes a 24-hour city in terms of engaging.
Better nighttime economy, better support for our nighttime economy.
Yeah. All that, yeah.
People
all
feeling that they can come out and about.
And I got to say that given some of the more recent conversations we've been having in some of the I think slow changing of some of the thinking, right, with some of our elected officials, and potentially with some of the shifts, right, in the leadership of our city, I actually think this might not be too far off, right? I think there might be a path. It might be narrow given some of the challenges our city faces, but I also think that the opportunities are very big too. So we're definitely looking forward to continuing to partner with the both of you in making your arts and culture czar platforms, czarina platforms happen.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Now that our podcast is about to end, Julia and Grace, where can they find you and where can they find Historic Milwaukee?
So Doors Open, well, if you go to doorsopenmilwaukee.org, but that's just through October 3rd. Otherwise, historicmilwaukee.org. And we'll have some of the virtual Doors Open content up there for people to view. And Julia, you want to pitch our app?
Yeah, so you can find our app. It's Historic Milwaukee Inc. in the Google Play or the Apple Store. It's free to download. Some of the tours are free. There's some with a small fee. I will say, just to circle back, John Gerda does narrate one of the tours. That's that. But you can also find Historic Milwaukee. Our handle is @HistoricMilwaukee on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
Awesome.
Never let a podcast go by without mentioning John Gerda. It's true. It has to happen, right? We have to pay the John Gerda tax on our
Julie and Grace, thanks so much for being on the pod.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I love Doors Open. It was a beautiful weather weekend. I didn't participate this year, and hearing them talk about it makes me excited to get at it. So that's what I love. I was like, man, I had a blast when I've done Doors Open. I've been to USC, US Pink Building. I went to the new ballet building when it opened, right? All these things. So like it reminded me how cool it was on a beautiful fall, sunny day to be in these really cool buildings in Milwaukee. So definitely whetted my appetite for getting involved.
You know what I was reminded of? I think before we started working together, I think Doors Open was one of the times in the year where we saw each other.
Yeah.
Like in person. We would do the Doors Open thing.
We would do our doors together. Yeah, that's right. We go visit again. We walk around town. Went to the Common Council room, right?
Yeah,
And check at City Hall, and went to a fire station, I think, the firehouse.
That's right. Firehouse.
City Hall, downtown, or by City Hall right there. So, yeah. So now that we work.
Now that we work together, we don't go to Doors Open. No, but in all seriousness, I think every time we get an opportunity to chat with Julia or Grace or Historic Milwaukee, I think their passion for our city and its history and its spaces and its architecture is just so infectious. And so it's hard not to come away from talking to them and thinking, I want to get out there and just sort of like soak in all of the stuff about our city.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, even though we're talking about the history of the city, it's really notable about who they're engaging to tell the story.
Yeah.
And that's important as we share a new story together, right? How we look back together. And I'm really pleased with how, I really believe how inclusive and really inviting Historic Milwaukee Incorporated is thinking about as we're shaping this new narrative together about the city. And so excited to amplify that and experience that as we move forward. Is a case of Adam Carr having a whole bunch of artists talk about this with and that recent panel and as they move forward, bringing more programming to different neighborhoods in person and virtually.
Yeah. So how much longer do you think they're going to be able to avoid our incredible product pitches on how to improve on how they should improve their
app? I think they're doing great, but if they want, I'm holding my arm here. They're at this level, which is pretty high. But if they want to get to this level, I'm raising my hand about 6 inches higher. Come on, consider our ideas, right? Like,
That's right.
Where in the world is Carol Cheese Curd?
That's right.
You know, or where in Milwaukee, or the other idea that came to mind. How about like a Dan Brown style, like conspiracy mystery about Milwaukee, like National Treasure style? You know, like there's some clues all over. It's on the app It's geocaching. Like,
that's right.
And you don't talk about it. Just people stumble into it.
People stumble into it. That's right.
What's this? And they're walking around. And then within
there, there's that Easter egg of the 8-bit video game where Solomon George and Byron get into like fist fights, like old timey fist fights with each other.
Yeah, exactly. There's little side quests and whatnot. and the ending leads you to the Imagine MK office, and you get to David's office. Like that's the ending. And it's like if someone randomly shows up at your office, David, you're like, oh, Mac must have installed the game. If somebody's asking you, I'm looking for the Crypt Keeper. If I'm giving you that phrase, David, be aware that person
that we'll have made it. Yeah, that's right.
You have to give them some prize because they solved a ton of they solved so many questions and riddles. We're gonna make Milwaukee an escape room. That's where it is. Historical. The whole city's a big old escape room. That's what
it's gonna start at the Spy Museum and end up at my office. That's it.
It's just two steps. That sounds right. That sounds right.
Through Sunstone Studios and Bobbert's Restaurant.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, you know who would want to have play that?
Definitely our listeners.
Oh, our listeners. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy this episode and you'd like to support the pod, tell others about it, will you? Post about it on social, like how great Dan Condon and Eric Horner do. Like, again, our Boulder listeners are so good at sharing a Milwaukee podcast. Or leave a rating and review or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you also listen to back episodes of Black Imagination and Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE or at Facebook at @imaginemke. Or go to the website and get the amplifier, which is David Lee's personal email to you every other week about what's awesome in town.
Thanks again. And we will catch you next Tuesday, or we'll see you in your email inbox.